the Public News Service Daily Newscast, May the 3rd, 2023. I'm Mike Clifford. Advocates for Montana's most vulnerable residents are pushing back on a budget plan passed by the U.S. House, saying it would have disastrous consequences for people already faced with trying to find affordable housing in the state.
Known as the Limit, Save, and Grow Act, the measure would raise the federal debt limit and reduce spending, including cutting rental voucher funding that helps people afford a place to live, the program once known as Section 8. Attorney Amy Hall with the Montana Legal Services Association says that would affect 350,000 families, including in Montana.
About 1,500 families in Montana would lose access to rental assistance that is provided currently. Those would include older adults, persons with disabilities, families with children, and folks who without rental assistance would be at risk of being unhoused.
Hall says Montana's indigenous tribes would also lose funding. According to a White House fact sheet about the GOP proposal, 710 fewer miles of railroad track would also go uninspected next year in Montana alone, and three air traffic control towers would be shuttered if the budget bill becomes law. I'm Mark Moran.
Now from the Associated Press, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen notified Congress Monday that the U.S. could default on its debt as early as June 1. If lawmakers do not raise or suspend the nation's borrowing authority before then, and avert what could potentially become a global financial crisis. The AP reports in a letter to House and Senate leaders, Yellen urged congressional leaders to protect the full faith and credit of the U.S., that to address the $31.4 trillion limit on its legal borrowing authority. The Republican-controlled Indiana General Assembly flexed its muscle while approving the state's next budget.
Tucked away in the $45.5 billion two-year spending plan are big raises for Indiana's top elected officials. Governor Eric Holcomb's successor in 2025 will receive nearly a 50% increase, making nearly $200,000 a year. Stephanie Wells, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute, says she understands there's a fair amount of 11th-hour negotiations when lawmakers are voting on the next budget.
Our governor, for example, went from far below the national average of executive compensation to more towards the top. That may well be very justifiable. Same with the lieutenant governor. I think that that salary is more in line probably with what other states are paying.
However, Wells says her organization always prefers that policy decisions are made after robust public discussion. I'm Joey Graham reporting.
This is Public News Service. North Carolina farmers are calling on lawmakers to address manufacturer-imposed repair limitations on tractors and minimize disruptions on their farms.
A report by the North Carolina Public Interest Research Group reveals that broken equipment costs farmers $3 billion, with an additional $1 billion spent on repairs annually. For NC farmers, that cost is $103 million. Stuart Beam, a longtime Western North Carolina farmer, points out the constraints of modern agricultural technology that hinder farmers from fixing problems themselves, sidelining the requirements of small and medium-sized farms. He recalls a personal experience where he had to wait 2 weeks for assistance when his machinery broke down in March.
And in a lot of scenarios, even if we can replace that part, we still have to have a dealer bring their computer out to the field or take that machine to a dealer. And all that boils down to is downtime on the farm.
Manufacturers often enforce repair limitations on tractors and other heavy machinery to safeguard proprietary software and technology. Shantia Hudson reporting.
And Oregon needs more renewable energy, but also should be aware of where it sites new projects. Eric Tegadoff's been taking a look at a new report that provides guidelines for choosing the best locations.
In 2021, the Oregon legislature passed a law requiring electricity to come from non-emitting sources by 2040. New wind and solar facilities will need to be built where these resources are plentiful and also where there's access to transmission lines. Nathan Marcy with Defenders of Wildlife says responsible siting should consider locations with other characteristics, such as low impacts on biodiversity and agricultural production.
Minimize conflict with communities, cultural resources, and historic values. There's a lot of important history, of course, in different cultures and their resources in the state, trying not to conflict with those.
Marcy says sites also should not conflict with areas that have high recreational value.
And finally, our Suzanne Potter lets us know some community groups want to remove the concrete from the Los Angeles River and return it to its natural state.
Melanie Winter with the nonprofit River Project says a real riverbed would allow water to seep into the aquifer, reduce fire risk, and improve wildlife habitat.
We're looking for more open space in communities that lack them. We're looking to secure local water supply. There's never been a better opportunity to show how important the river is to a climate-resilient Los Angeles.
So we're pointing to a site in Long Beach that provides an alternative. This story is a KCRW Solutions Journalism California News Service collaboration. This is Mike Clifford for Public News Service, member and listener supported. Here are some radio stations, big and small. Your favorite podcast platform. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.